It's a trap.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 34 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
We're just under a month away from the 2016 X-Wing World Championships.
So pressure is on you to have a list ready right now so you can start testing your games.
Yeah, at this point, we're trying to finalize what list we're going to go, or at least what permutation of our list we're going to bring out to Worlds. And you guys should be doing the same and getting those reps in and those practice games in.
And if we're going to take our own advice, we first need to understand what list we expect to see. And when we have new expansions that come out without any big tournaments between now and Worlds, it'll be hard to see exactly how the new cards will shake up the existing meta and what we really expect to see make it to the top.
So this episode and all episodes leading up to the World Championships at the beginning of November are going to focus in on our preparation for Worlds and what we're expecting to see and how we're preparing for it.
And hopefully we'll have a little bit of fun along the way.
So here we go. So Carson, in preparing for the World Championship, a good starting point in determining what list we should be flying is to look at what we're expecting other people to fly in this upcoming tournament.
And I always, just for simplicity's sake, break it up into all the different factions so that I can just sort them. Okay, what Imperial list do I expect to see? What Rebel list do I expect to see? What Scum list do I expect to see? That just helps me compartmentalize it a little bit more.
So under each of those headers, we're looking at the general archetypes we're expecting to see. It's not always one particular list. Sometimes we'll see lists with similar builds, but slightly different permutations on the upgrade cards they chose. But in this case, we're talking more big picture, like crackshot A-Wing swarms or triple defender lists, things like that. Give us a kind of big picture view of what kind of lists we're expecting to play against.
You really want to be thinking about all of the different permutations within a certain squad archetype, just because in your local area, Dengar is built one certain way, another state or another country could fly it completely differently, and you could find yourself caught off guard. So you want to be thinking ahead of time, okay, I see this squad doing well. What are a lot of the different ways that can be tweaked, and how would that change this matchup? So you can broadly be prepared and hopefully don't find yourself caught off guard too much when your opponent sets their list up against you at the Worlds.
Yeah, and I mean, even more so than any sort of regional or national event, Worlds is going to be pulling in players from all around the world. So we're going to see a bunch of different metagames kind of converge. So it's interesting to try and figure out what the top players are going to be playing, what lists they're going to be flying, because they're not just looking at their, like you're saying, they're not just looking at their local competitive scene. They're looking at the competitive scene as a whole. So to that end, we're going to start by looking at what we expect to see in terms of Imperial list archetypes.
People know a lot about what you're going to see here. I don't think too much changed with the Empire from Wave 9, so I think we're going to see a lot of the same, which was just a few different squad types.
I think the biggest changes we've seen recently in terms of what ships and upgrades are available came in the Imperial Veterans expansion with the improvements to the TIE Defender specifically.
And I think from the time that was released, the Defenders have proven themselves as an established Imperial ship that fits into a few different squad types.
But as a whole, I think the Imperial faction in general seems to be leaning towards these kind of traditional archetypes that we've seen recur throughout the past several tournament seasons. So to start off, we're going to talk about one that's kind of an obvious choice for a lot of veteran players. We've got the Palpatine Aces list.
So here you have a Omnicron group pilot taking the Emperor Palpatine crew. And then you're going to generally have two ace ships, whether or not that be an auto thruster ace ship like a TIE Interceptor or a TIE Advanced prototype, or one of these new defenders that's more of a jousty efficient ace.
Especially now that the TIE Defender is a more viable option to use as one of your two aces, you've got some real diversity of options here. I think more traditionally, maybe we'd look at something where you're running ships with auto thrusters who really depend on arc dodging and not taking in a lot of damage, and then just slowly whittling your opponent down and removing a couple damage every round, all the while maintaining a really strong defensive posture of arc dodging and reducing damage through tokens and auto thrusters.
And if your list is not equipped to either keep up with these ships movement-wise or have enough offensive modifications to get through all of their green dice, defensive tokens, and the Palpatine backup, I don't think your squad is going to be successful, because this is going to be one of the most played lists. You can expect to play at least one game, probably more like two or three games against this in the Swiss rounds.
Yeah, regardless of the actual ships chosen, there are some general things you need to keep in mind for when you're going to plan on facing these. Palpatine Aces is one of those lists where you really do need to have an answer in your list to take this down. Regardless of whether they're flying Soonterfell or the Inquisitor or a TIE Defender or anything like that, TIE Advanced, you need to be able to push damage through a ship that has some sort of token modification and may or may not have auto thrusters modification.
So when we're talking about techs against these, it's either you have higher pilot skill than them with repositioning actions, or you have upgrade cards like Zuckuss making them reroll their defense dice, or elite pilot talents like Crackshot, which makes them spend their defensive tokens unadvantageously for the opponent.
Or you can even look at hard counters to these lists, like an auto blaster turret on a ghost, or things that guarantee damage push through. One type of ship that has a recurring problem with Aces lists like this are ships that only have two attack dice. If they don't have some other way to modify that through Crackshot or other upgrade cards to make sure that damage lands, two attack dice ships are not going to be doing a lot of damage against ships with three agility and tokens for defense, even if you have several of them.
Looking at all of our other squad types, most of them have at least three attack dice. If not, then they have certain upgrade cards that will give them an edge in this matchup.
So Carson, can you tell us some common just Palp Ace builds you'd expect to see in terms of what ships people would be flying with their Palpatine shuttle?
Yeah, I mean, so specifically on the arc-dodging Palp Aces, we have the Howard style, which uses Soonterfell and the Inquisitor at 35 and 31 points, respectively, and then a Palp shuttle with Sensor Jammer.
This can be one of the hardest combinations to push damage through. You've got Inquisitor and you've got Soonterfell, both ships that can token up defensively, get both focus and evade on their turn, still have a fair amount of offensive output, and then with a Sensor Jammer on the shuttle, it makes it that much harder to get rid of Palpatine and that Palpatine backup of converting a die.
And I think this squad is good, even if a Howard is not flying it. Obviously, it's at its best there, but I think, especially because of their success, we'll see a lot more players utilizing this list.
Yeah, generally, the better a list does on the kind of world stage of X-Wing, the more likely you'd expect to see it in your Swiss rounds at Worlds.
And then also at Gen Con, we saw the success of lists like what Jamie Kreck flew, where he included a Defender, Countess Riad, in his Palpatine list, and then also included Karner Jax.
Well, generally, as a rule, repositioning abilities like Countess Riad's tend not to do so well at lower pilot skills, but Riad has really proved that at pilot skill 5, with such a powerful ability, being able to turn your straight maneuvers into K-turns, and especially green K-turns at that, it's proven very effective, especially when combined with Juke and the TIE X7 title, getting that free evade after you perform a 3, 4, or 5 speed maneuver.
And I thought Juke was just good in lists where you also had Karner Jax or some other way where they're not going to be able to use a focus token to modify the die you just juked down. However, we've seen Merrick Steele also be successful with Juke instead of Veteran Instincts, which surprised me. I thought for sure he would want to be at pilot skill 9 because of all the other pilot skill 8 aces out there. But I think Juke Merrick Steele's been more effective than the VI version, which I think is interesting because with Defender Palp Aces being more successful, that makes the pilot skill you choose for your list more interesting. That gives you more options for you as a player to prepare for as far as what pilot skill you include in your list. Typically with the repositioning aces, they're going up as high of pilot skill as they can and focusing on outmaneuvering you, whereas the Defenders have just a lot of efficiency, and usually you know they're going to K-turn and just can't really do too much about it, so they don't really care that much about their pilot skill and would rather just take these offensive upgrades instead. And so now, perhaps 7 isn't such a terrible pilot skill to have. I still don't think that's where I want to be, but it's less unappealing than it has been before.
I think since the dawn of the 4 Y-Wing twin laser turret spam, and more recently the triple U-boat or triple Jumpmaster rocking the torpedoes, extra munitions, overclock, that whole deal with guidance chips, pilot skills in competitive X-Wing have been starting to trend down a little bit. I can remember a time where flying a pilot skill 6 ship was almost unthinkable, but now you're looking at combinations where a double aggressor list, IGE, B, and IGC, or A, can really stand out, especially now that we've got cards like Crackshot that can really augment their efficiency so that you don't have to worry so much about the repositioning aspect. You just have to worry about pushing out damage. To that end, looking at things now, pilot skill 8 has become a very viable spot for ace ships to be at. There are points now where if you're flying a pilot skill 8 ship, you would still want to take an initiative initiative bid so that you can beat out other pilot skill 8 ships like Inquisitor or Vessery with VI.
And actually, one ship we didn't mention where pilot skill is a huge factor in the Palpace list is the Phantoms, or Whisper specifically, where being at or above pilot skill 9 let you attack Whisper before she has a chance to cloak, and that was very important. However, I don't know how much Whisper we're going to see. Nationally, we haven't seen Phantoms do that well since Dengar with Zuckuss came out, and it didn't really care how many green die they had, and you're just going to make them reroll them all.
Phantoms have been a very strong competitive force for a long time, but we are definitely starting to see them be less popular now, and I think that's due to a couple things. Dengar, recently, who's been able to, with that double shot, even if you're cloaked up, you don't have as many tokens you can use to modify your defense. And with Zuckuss out there now rerolling defensive die, your tokens might not even be relevant because you might be forced to reroll good results into blank results. I think the other area they suffer in is the lack of auto thrusters. For a ship with such low hit points, that cloak and the token action isn't always enough to prevent damage, especially if you're not shooting back.
However, we have seen some Phantoms do pretty well overseas, which is always an interesting thing to try and comprehend when preparing for Worlds. You can see the list, but it's hard to comprehend exactly the environmental differences, or if people are just playing them very differently, and that's why we're seeing them pop up in like UK nationals, but not here.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to account for why we'd see these distinct national differences between countries. But it's something you do have to account for, because a lot of these players will be coming over here and playing Swiss with their Whispers out in force. So it's something you have to consider. But I think right now, without auto thrusters, there's a lot of decent counters to a Whisper. You've got torpedoes coming out there. You're not getting auto thrusters at range 3, and you're not getting additional agility. So even with 4 tokens, if you've got 3 torpedo boats shooting at you, there's a good chance that they're going to put some damage through on your Whisper.
I think where I'm at right now on Phantoms is there might be some there, but I don't think I'm going to keep that pilot skill 9 in mind when I build my list, whether or not, oh, I need to be able to shoot before Whisper.
And I think in terms of Palpatine aces, I think the go-to is definitely the Howard-style Soonterfell Inquisitor, but there is some variance. But I would expect to see these Inquisitor and Soonterfells out there more frequently than I'd expect to see Whispers.
Absolutely.
I think the interesting question, Carson, is are we going to see a lot of ships that don't take auto thrusters like TIE Defenders in those ace slots, or maybe even a TIE Advanced?
Well, I do love me some Darth Vader. He's probably one of my favorite ships to fly. I mean, boost barrel roll, don't get a stress. It's amazing. But the lack of auto thrusters, I think, makes him pretty unappealing. Yes, he has 1 or 2 more hit points than a TIE Advanced prototype or an Interceptor. But that lack of auto thrusters, I think, is just going to catch up to him over the course of a game.
Yeah, I think he's particularly susceptible to torpedo ordnance loads, where if you get 3 ships shooting at you, even if you double action with Vader to get a focus and an evade, you're still definitely going to take some damage.
What Vader does bring to the table, though, is he does smash other Imperial Ace ships, because you give him adaptability or veteran instincts because he doesn't need an elite pilot talent. And so then you're out positioning them. You have barrel roll, and hopefully you've given him engine upgrades so you can just really outmaneuver him, and he does a decent amount of damage.
And I think another thing that makes it a little trickier to fly a TIE Advanced or a TIE Defender in your Palpatine Aces list is the point costs, because both those ships come in at similar point totals most of the time. We're looking at 33 to 35 points for kind of the standard builds for those ships, with some variance there. Thankfully, we have the Inquisitor, though, always as a backup as your cheap ace option.
Unless you give him Prockets.
Prockets on the Inquisitor is a good combo, and it can push out a lot of damage. I think in general, I don't know, it's one of those situations where that's a ship that's definitely efficient at its point cost, but I don't always think that that extra 3 points is worth the investment for what you lose out on a different ship.
So going back to how the Howard brothers build their Palp list, they elected to, instead of giving Prockets to the Inquisitor, give their shuttle Sensor Jammer, which is the weak point in the list. Both the Inquisitor and Soonterfell are very difficult ships to burn down, where they'll have at least focus evade and auto thrusters and Palpatine defense. But that shuttle just has 1 defense die, and so Sensor Jammer gives that just a little bit more survivability, so they can keep that shuttle alive 1 or 2 more turns longer when it does get focus fired.
Yeah, and let's talk about that Sensor Jammer too, because that can be very nasty, because effectively what you're doing is you're locking down your opponent's focus token if they really want to push as much damage through as possible on the shuttle. like, let's say you're targeting the shuttle first because you want to get Emperor Palpatine off the board, which I think is often a good strategy when you're playing against these high defense aces, because you might target Soontir, you might target the Inquisitor, and you might do zero damage if they're tokened up at range three with auto thrusters and they have the Palpatine to back them up on the defense. So I think if you're targeting the shuttle, that's often a good option, but that sensor jammer just makes it such a horrible choice, because you need to basically keep your focus token and rather than use it defensively, have to save it for that offensive shot on the shuttle.
Right. If you're playing like a swarm list with Z95s or TIE Fighters where you're just auto-focusing every turn anyways, it's not that big of a deal. You're generally not going to be spending your focus on defense that often.
Yeah, if you're flying five or six ships, right. Maybe a couple of them will get targeted, but most of them will still have their focus tokens.
But on lists where you have two to three ships, even if you just spend one focus on defense, well, now half your firepower is significantly weakened. And you're just limited to taking that focus action if you want to do damage to the Palp Shuttle, where ships like Aggressors that really rely on their target locks to do a lot of their damage, having to have that focus around is really annoying.
Yeah, they suffer a lot because they're not always taking a focus. Often they're taking a evade token because they need that extra defense to make sure they live an extra couple of rounds. So having that sensor jammer on the shuttle can be pretty disgusting for ships that really do depend on non-focus modification to their die rolls. Hey, Carson, I was wondering, what if I am a Radio TCX listener, but I want to start supporting the show more directly?
Well, Tim, you could go on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and become a supporter of the show.
Is that the website where I can pledge support on a month-to-month basis and then gain access to all kinds of patron-only content as well as entry into the monthly Radio TCX raffle?
Yeah, this month we are giving away Movie Still, Gold Squadron Y-Wings, TIE Academy Pilots, a Wave 9 ship of your choice, minus the Fang Fighter, and your choice of one of the two extended art ship cards from last year's World's Epic event.
I've also seen a lot of players sporting these really cool Radio TCX target locks. How do I get those?
Those who support us at our squad leader tier get access to those sweet red and blue Radio TCX three-prong target locks.
Made from a really cool-looking mirrored acrylic, and they come pre-painted, but with the masking still on, so if you want to paint them yourself, you have that option as well.
These target locks are, of course, exclusive to our Radio TCX patron supporters, so if you want to have the coolest target locks in the galaxy, go on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and become a supporter of the show.
That sounds really cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
And a big thank you to everyone who has already become a supporter of the show. And now, back to the cast.
So we've talked about Palpatine Aces builds and kind of what we're expecting from that, but there's another very different archetype coming from the Imperials that I think we do need to prepare for.
Right, and that's, of course, the Crackshot TIE Swarm. This list runs at least six ships, most of which are Black Squadron TIE Fighters with the Crackshot upgrade, and then hopefully Howl Runner, also with Crackshot, and then one or two Ace TIE Fighters, or maybe you have a seventh ship and have two Academies instead.
Yeah, this one in general has a very consistent strategy. You've got these ships with Crackshot. They're rolling very few attack dice, but typically you have Howl Runner in there like you would in most TIE Swarms, allowing you to have that offensive modification, some token modification, and then Crackshot to push that damage through, given that you only have two attack dice. But there is a lot of variance between the exact combination of TIE Fighters and TIE FOs that you'll see in these builds.
I mean, so if you're going for the Ace TIE Fighters or one TIE FO, you're going for the ones that add damage. So Mauler Mythyl, Scourge, or Zeta Leader all increase their attack value. Or you slip in a ship like Wampa to give you an extra edge against the Ace matchup where you want to just slip in little incremental bits of damage.
We've also seen combinations where rather than going for the named pilots with a lot of unique offensive abilities, players will go for straight efficiency, combining Black Squadron TIE Fighters with Crackshot, along with Omega Squadron TIE FOs with Crackshot, giving them that extra shield and sacrificing the unique abilities you get from a lot of the named pilots.
Right. I mean, so the big thing list building wise on preparing for a TIE Fighter Crack Swarm is, okay, well, how vulnerable is my list to multiple medium damage shots?
Especially coming in at pilot skill 4, which has become a very relevant place given the diversity of pilot skills we're seeing now. So if you're flying, you know, a list that has all pilot skill 3s, like the typical triple jump master list, that pilot skill 4 can be very relevant because they're shooting first and they're potentially taking your ships off the board before you have a chance to respond.
Especially if you're a contracted scout. scout player, or maybe you're running a Lothal Rebel,
or even a Trandoshan Slaver or Party Bus coming in at pilot skill 2, you've got all those cool bounty hunters, but if you get taken down on round 2, they're not going to do much good for you.
So if you're planning on running one of these ships where you have a decent amount of hit points but really low agility, so each attack against you, it doesn't matter if they only have 2 attack dice, it's going to add up. You need to keep in mind, okay, well, what am I going to do against the swarm build? Maybe I want to pair that large low agility ship with a ship that does have either high agility or perhaps good repositioning. Like you pair your ghost with a Dash Rendar that can just get out of those TIE fighters arcs instead.
Yeah, ever since the inception of the TIE swarm, which came with wave 1 and the release of the original core set, because the TIE fighter has been an available, very efficient ship since wave 1, we've seen these ships do very well against ships that have low agility, whether that's Millennium Falcons or Decimators, or now we've got the Trandoshan Slaver, ships like that. They do well at pushing out damage because there's not much coming on the defensive end, but they also then struggle against ships that are very good at arc dodging and repositioning. Given that these swarms generally operate at a lower pilot skill, so that means the high pilot skill arc dodgers are moving after them and able to arc dodge and reposition out of their firing arcs.
Crackshot does really up their damage output against their high agility ships, but only for that one turn they use it. So if you're able to successfully use cards like Glitterstim in that one turn where they get all their range one shots, you can mitigate a lot of that damage where even Crackshot might not be able to push damage through.
I think the key thing you'd be worried about as a swarm player with this is making sure you can push that damage through on those high agility defensive modifying ships. If you're not able to catch those ships in arc and be able to generate enough hits to make those crack shots work, you're going to be in a rough situation in the late game.
If you're not able to take TIE fighters off the board early, this list becomes very oppressive. But once you start taking 1, 2, 3 TIE fighters off, the list falls off pretty quickly.
Especially if the remaining ships have already spent their crack shot.
As long as Howl Runner is down pretty early, that's really what you need to do.
So Carson, if you were flying against a crack shot TIE swarm, what would be the types of things you're considering?
Well, my first question is, can I try to drag them through the asteroid field and break up their firing arc so that they're not able to bring all of their guns on one target at the same turn?
Yeah, asteroid placement is very key here because given the number of ships being flown, it's going to be very important that the crackshot swarm player can maneuver those ships effectively together so that they're all sharing their firing arcs effectively and shooting the same ship at the same time. Focus fire is very important for swarm builds.
My second thought is, do I want to bring my ships together and try and alpha off a few TIE fighters, or split them up and make them chase, commit, hopefully I can run away with the ship they commit to, then try and attack them on the flanks, try and make the swarm player make tough decisions. What I don't want to do is take that list head on.
Yeah, generally a swarm list like this, particularly a crackshot swarm, is about the most efficient jousting list you can have. So if you take them head on, you're expecting to lose. Like you're saying, Carson, giving the crack swarm player tough decisions to make, like bringing in one ship from the bottom of the board, your side of the board, and then swinging one ship around on the side, suddenly that swarm player has to commit, either take your ship straight on or turn in. And if they make the wrong decision, or if they commit to one direction, you're able to turn that ship off or collide it into those ships so they don't get all their ships shooting at the same ship at the same time. That can really determine a game for you.
This is a tough list to fly against. One I wish more of our local players played so I could get some more practice games against them. Unfortunately, we have too many aggressor players deterring people away from flying the swarms, I guess, here.
Yeah, definitely a concern we're seeing here in Minneapolis. Crackshot swarms can be a challenge, but I think the key here to remember is generally you don't want to joust them. You want to find some other way to make them commit to a direction and penalize them for making any small mistake.
It's definitely good for a reason, and there's not just an easy answer for beating it. And I think it's a list you're probably going to have to expect to play at least one in your Swiss rounds.
So I think those two archetypes, the Palpatine Aces list and the Crackshot TIE Swarm, would be the most frequently seen Imperial lists I'd expect at Swiss at Worlds. But we also kind of want to talk about potential ship archetypes and list archetypes we might see at Worlds that could maybe surprise us or other players.
Right, and so what we're talking about here is last year, the Triple K-Wing Tactician list really caught a lot of players off guard. No one really expected K-Wings to be that successful, but it made it very far into the cut.
Yeah, especially at such a low agility, but having that twin laser turret and tactician dealing out all that stress kind of became a very powerful control list. Obviously, with the new rules changes regarding how attacks resolve, and particularly how Twin Laser Turret resolves, we would not expect to see the K-Wings return, but lists like that that could come out of nowhere, we would kind of want to anticipate and figure out how to counter them.
So for me, perhaps with the Imperials, it's going to be something with the TIE Bomber, where it's pretty cheap and has a lot of upgrade options. You can do munitions, bombs, or now there's the TIE Shuttle where you can put crew options there.
And they've got some really cool crew options with Fleet Officer and Systems Officer both being relatively cheap and pretty powerful.
Yeah, or just throw a tactician on there.
Yeah, I think at this point, an 18-point stress engine from a TIE Bomber shuttle with that tactician on there could actually be a very powerful combination.
So we're not saying bombers are going to be the best thing ever.
What I would never expect that.
There might be something there that a skill player can catch people off guard with.
Yeah, because you would not expect to see a bomber there. We're not saying we're expecting to see a lot of bombers at Worlds, or maybe even any bombers, but this is one of those ships that could surprise us.
There will be some. I'm going to say it there. There'll be some.
I think there will be a lot of representation for a lot of ships, but looking at cards like Tactician, that is a good Imperial engine for getting that kind of control effect that we usually don't see outside of maybe like Rebel Captive, which has not been popular for a while.
Rebel Captive Tactician, that sounds pretty great right there.
That could come into play and kind of deal out a double stress, because I think a bomber would be an obvious first target given its relatively low agility, probably low amount of token modification, and it's 6-hull. You could probably take it out in one volley, I'd expect, one round of firing.
Right, and it's cheap enough where it's not really competing for any of their sweet aces.
Yeah, so it could slip in into a list in an interesting way. Maybe it could fall into a list type more like the, I guess you'd say, budget aces, where we saw a shuttle Omega Leader with Juke and Comm Relay, and then an Inquisitor and Wampa, the TIE Fighter. One of those more budget lists that kind of has a lot more control effects and ways to push damage through.
Right. I don't know how I feel about 4 bombers. Like, that just doesn't sound good at all. But I think one bomber, I think you could slip in into a list and be pretty cool.
Or maybe we're completely crazy and there won't be any bombers there. Who knows?
Right. That's the fun of this.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you enjoy listening to the show and want to stay up to date on the show and on X-Wing news in general, please go to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and what other X-Wing podcast listeners might enjoy it. We don't really do any advertising for the show, so leaving a 5-star review on there is really appreciated. And if you just take a couple minutes to do that, we'd really be thankful for it.
And if you want to become a supporter of the show, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx.
That's patreon.com/radiotcx.
Talk to you guys next week. Blow this thing, go home, Tim.